Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Doing Well, the Wellbeing Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I am your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Doing Well. And on this week's episode, we're going to talk about pathways to collective well-being, the key role of community connectedness. And today I have a very special guest in our studio. I don't get to do in-studio recordings very often, so I'm very excited. I'm going to introduce our guest and I'm going to throw it to her to introduce more about herself. Robin Cass is an experienced businesswoman, mother, life partner, facilitator, coach, and community galvanizer who has been architecting professional networks for peer learning for over two decades. She's an active member of a global community of warriors for the human spirit and was one of the founders of a local Australian changemakers community called The Grove. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been so lovely chatting to you earlier, but I'm sure there's so much more to learn about you. So this question is not just for the audience, but also for myself. Why did you do the work that you were doing and why this topic today?
Well, I actually come from a family of people who really pride themselves on being their own boss. And the advice I was given was to be successful in business, you had to have a few key things under your belt. And primarily, and this was from my very sort of masculine orientated, materially orientated family of origin around definitions of success, I was told that I had to understand the numbers. I had to understand how business works. And if you're not making a profit, you are not going to be able to be sustaining being your own boss, which was the very important goal. And so I actually studied economics and accounting in my undergrad in the late 1980s and came out of university with a little briefcase and pinstripe suit. And I went off and traveled and there I worked for less than a year as an accountant in London. Yeah. And then I got home and I went, oh my goodness, been there and done that. And it was time to move on to the second piece of the puzzle that I had taken in that I needed to have, which was in order to be able to sell. That no matter what you're doing, you have to be able to share your dreams and your ideas and influence people, and you needed to be able to sell. So I did a graduate traineeship in a magazine publishing house, and actually there I became really interested not only in how to turn a blank page of the magazine into a solution for a marketing manager, because that was what an advert is about. And I did get to do that, but or learn to do that. But what I was fascinated by in that very early formative time of my career was, why are these marketing managers putting so much effort into creating magazines for people who shared a special interest? We did all sorts of special interest publications. And that was about communities of people who loved fishing, and communities of people who traded on the stock exchange, and communities of people who were members of a certain health fund or mm-hmm. shareholders of a certain company. And so I already then started becoming very interested in the idea of community. But it only really came back around a little bit later in my career around this obsession now with what community is and why community matters. So the third thing that I was told you didn't have to be the accountant, but you had to understand the bottom line. You didn't have to be the best salesperson in the organization, but you had to be able to bring people on board, especially with your ideas at some point. And third of all, you needed to find something that you really cared about, because to sustain, to really persevere in any endeavor, you have to really connect with the purpose of that endeavor. And I, by this stage, was working in a media organization and billboards, and I got to a crossroads where I was like, I actually don't really care about billboard advertising that's just promoting more fast-moving consumer goods. In fact, that really became quite a misalignment for me around my values and sensibilities. And so I took a career break quite suddenly. I was young. I exited too quickly, but I took time to reflect and remember that what really does matter to me always and still is about people. I'm very much a people person, and people development, us as humans being developmental in our own journeys as we deal with life's inevitable lows and highs. And so that was when I got into coaching and trained as a coach. It was around the Sydney Olympics times. So that was 2000, the turn of the millennia. And it was before coaching was really too much on the radar. In fact, I think someone said, how do you know it's not a fad? And of course, now 2023, we know that coaching is a really highly regarded industry and profession. Yeah. And so I was quite pioneering as a coach. But I found the coaching work a little bit lonely. I was still single and working from home. Then I was like one of the first people to even have a computer and a home office. And I didn't even have a dog yet. So I was quite lonely. So I decided to put myself back into the mix. And I met another entrepreneurial guy, and together we set up a business network exclusive to human resources leaders. And my connection with the why of that was really that these leaders of the people function in business would have the potential to influence in a positive way the humanity in business. And so galvanizing the leaders of that function to make wise decisions and impact the work lives of hundreds of thousands of Australians really got me out of bed in the morning. And we had a fabulous journey setting up what was called TalkPoint for that dedicated purpose. And then I could really get into my fascination with communities, because the idea was this was a professional community that we were establishing connectedness between the members of, where there had been nothing at all. In those days, you didn't go to university to study human resources. It was an emerging career out of payroll and staffing into personnel, and people came from the most interesting, diverse places into being leaders of that function in organizations. So that was really my first grand experiment in the space of, I think you call it like animating a community into being. And I just loved it.
Ah, that's beautiful. And, you know, professional networking, you know, that's also a different kind of community nowadays that, you know, we are more immersed in. You know, it's LinkedIn, for example.
Yeah. I remember when LinkedIn first was coming into the sort of conversation.
Yeah.
And we partnered. There was this terrific guy who LinkedIn sent from Silicon Valley. I must have been from California to Australia. He was the Australian head, and there was no other employee in Australia. And I've got his phone number somewhere in my phone. I can't remember his name right now. And we got introduced, and we did a masterclass for the human resources leaders to say to them, this is really critical that you guys get your head across LinkedIn. It's going to completely transform recruitment. Yeah. And it's also going to change how individuals sort of think of themselves as sort of brands, I guess, in the public domain.
Yeah.
And there was an enormous resistance from a lot of people in the room, actually. People did not want to believe that things were changing. And, of course, now we can't even imagine getting a job without having a LinkedIn profile. I think it's the first thing people do. I'm sure that's what your team did. They Googled me and came up with my LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a big deal nowadays, and it's such a great way for a professional community, the professional community anywhere in the world, actually. It helps you to look at people. And actually, I really like what people share on LinkedIn. And, you know, you can come across a post from someone who is, you know, probably doing the same thing you're doing from across the globe, and they share their insight, and you're like, yes, I click with that. And that's so amazing, right? And things have changed, obviously. And today we're going to talk about community that's more than just professional networking. We're going to touch on so much more. So I'm excited to talk about that. Before we go into that part of the conversation, let's talk a bit more about you. This part is called Have You Met Robin? And we're going to get some of your recommendations. I like this part because I think recommendations really speak to who you are as a person. So which book would you recommend?
It's such a reveal, isn't it? These questions.
It is.
So funny. Well, the book that I've actually got with me right here is a second edition of a very close to my heart book by my teacher, Margaret Wheatley. So Meg is an elder in the space of the doorway that I came in through was really around systems thinking, around being a humanitarian. Meg is very informed by her Buddhist practices and has really been on the map around teaching people about leadership and the new sciences. Mm. So there's a sort of an interception around a sense of what many today would call spirituality and leadership. So she's been a real pioneer in that space, and I was drawn to her and her work about 10 years ago when I was at a crossroads and needed to find my way through a lot of not knowing and uncertainty, and I really felt like I'd lost my way. And so this book is called Who Do We Choose to Be?
Would you like to show it to the audience that are watching the video version of this?
So it's a very powerful question.
Yeah.
And the bylines, I think, are really important as well. So she talks about facing reality, claiming leadership, and restoring sanity. And this book is also an outcome of the training that Meg offered to, and still offers, although the form has changed a lot. But about 8 years ago, I was able to apply to be part of an original cohort. There were three cohorts of about 30 in each globally. And we traveled from all over the world as very diverse people and leaders in our own fields. And we probably would never have got line of sight of each other if it wasn't for the fact that we all responded to this call from Meg to get together. I'm conscious that I'm going into quite a big story about what is called the Warriors for the Human Spirit, which is my professional community now. Mm-hmm. And I do want to talk more about that. But the question for now was really, what is the book? And that's the book that I've read many times already, and I strongly recommend for anybody who is seeing the world we're living in as a much more complex place right now.
Yeah, that is a very good question to ask ourselves, and we'll circle back to that community in a little bit, I'm sure. Next question is about a movie. Now let's change our headspace a little bit to the movie world. what is a movie you recommend to our audience?
Well, there's only one movie close to my heart right now, and that's the Barbie movie.
Oh, I think this is probably the fifth time someone on our show, the guest, I mean, has recommended this movie. And every time they say that, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I love that movie too. Okay, so you're our podcast guest today. I'm sure you've probably come across a lot of podcasts yourself. What is a podcast you would recommend to our audience?
Well, I had a particular answer ready for this question, which is probably quite a well-known podcast called On Being with Krista Tippett. And it's really superb around wisdom and understanding us as full human beings.
It's my first time hearing of the name, actually. Oh. So, yeah, there you go. Something new for me today.
Okay, good. Because I was going to say, if you had five people already mention it, there's another similar but probably more edgy, similar in the genre around becoming better people in the world and leaders, and a beautiful, fabulous woman, Lisa Gill, hosts this podcast out of the UK. She's from the UK. I think she might be based in Spain, but this podcast is called Leader Morphosis.
Oh.
And she's really talking into how we are having to morph our leadership at this moment in time. And I love her orientation around distributed leadership, participatory leadership, and a whole lot of other models of ways of being together and creating interconnected systems with fresh eyes and fresh thinking.
Yeah.
So she really understands systems thinking brilliantly, and she invites wonderfully interesting people who are very experimental around economic systems and all sorts of systems. So, yeah, that's probably a little bit more edgy.
Okay.
Wanting to give her a thumbs up.
Yeah, that's also a new one for me and for the show. So thank you for that. And next question. I mean, I'm kind of guessing I know the answer, but I still want to ask, who's your role model?
Oh, well, this is probably the question I had the most challenge around.
Yeah.
While I talk about my teachers with enormous respect and gratitude, I don't think about them as much as role models so much, because I think that we need to choose our teachers very deliberately and for very specific things that we see that they can teach us.
Yeah.
When we say role model, I think it's a very tricky one for me, actually, and I think you might even have asked for a famous role model, and I'm not much of a stargazer, so I'm not big on the whole celebrity attraction. But the person who has been role modeling for me a way of being in the world that I really aspire to and see as up ahead is an African American elder, Eileen Cooper Reed, who I've been blessed to get really, really close to, because she also was drawn to the warrior of the human spirit community that Meg galvanized. Mm-hmm. And Eileen Cooper Reed is an embodiment of a formidable, strong woman who is a matriarch in her family system, and she has a way of including more and more people. And I caught up with her also in person. I traveled to the States last month and went to visit her, and she and her daughters were starting to organize for a family reunion, and they had 120 people coming to the family reunion. And my daughter said to me, how's that even possible? You know, we come from a family of like four. Yeah. And I asked Eileen and she said, well, once you're a part of this family, even if you get divorced, even if you go to jail, even if you are still a part of this family. Yeah. And it's really this part of Eileen's capacity to welcome everybody and understand that the way you treat your most vulnerable in your family, and I'm going to extrapolate that into your community because that's what we're talking about today, is hugely showing of the type of community space maker you will be.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing that. Final question in this part. What is a course you've completed that left a really strong impact on you?
Well, I used to employ people to facilitate groups for our business network. And I was very busy doing the selling, right, enrolling people and joining the membership. And then I got to a point where I started wanting to also have that skill myself around holding the space for the collective wisdom to start coming through. And so that was when I personally decided to study facilitation. And the course that I did was offered by someone on faculty with Nancy Kline, that's K-L-I-N-E. And Nancy is the creator of a system called The Thinking Environment. And her preeminent book around that is called Time to Think. And so the course, I'm not sure if the course is called Time to Think or The Thinking Environment, but my teacher locally is a woman called Candace Smith, who came to Australia having become a faculty member of The Thinking Environment offshore, and she moved here just over 10 years ago. And I have trained ongoingly with Candace and brought a lot of my community into that system to learn how to create spaces where the quality of our thinking is not just improved but exponentially improved, and understand the conditions that help ignite that quality of thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, big gratitude to them for that work.
Yeah, beautiful. All right. Now we've got to know you a bit better. I'm sure our audience has, because I have, and I'm ready to talk about today's topic. Now we are going to talk about pathways to collective well-being, community, and everything to do with well-being. Before we get into the topic, I always ask my guests to define well-being because each person has their own definition. I'm sure you have your very own way of viewing well-being. So what does well-being mean to you, Robin?
Well, I think fundamentally the reflection of my well-being is about my relationship with myself in a lot of ways. My late mother used to say, you have to look at yourself in the mirror every morning. Make sure you like the person who looks back at you. And so in reflecting on that, I recognize that when I'm out of integrity, I don't feel as good about myself. And, you know, integrity is really just doing what you said you would. So for me, my sense of capability and capacity is a measure of my well-being. And it doesn't mean that everything's going great. It actually is more about my sense of my own agency and resilience to deal with whatever's going on. I think someone once called that like your bounce back ability or something. So it's very much initially around the connection to self.
Yeah.
And what I understand much more now is that there's a threefold connection piece. So the connection with self is the innermost, and then the connection with others, and beyond that, the connection with the more than human, whether we call that earth or spirit or whatever that even less visible sense of connection. So when I have practices in my life that foster connection with all three simultaneously, connection to self, connection to others, connection to earth, I feel like there's a lot more integrity to my structure of resilience and well-being.
Yeah, beautiful. I think it's a very unique definition to yourself, but it's also sort of inclusive of your interaction in the world, right? Because you're so right in saying that you have that connection with yourself, with others, and then with the earth. Well, to some people, it might be something else completely. But we all have those different aspects. At least we deal with them on a daily basis. And for well-being, we do know that it's really important to be able to at least look at ourselves, to be honest with ourselves. You know, at least that's what I've learned from this very show. Lots of different things about well-being, but those are the key things that I really resonate with personally. I also know that there are a lot of ways that people can sort of destroy their own well-being, and one of which is to not have that connection in the first place. That's one of the biggest misconceptions that people have when it comes to well-being, where they say, you know, like, as long as I have good relationships with others, I'm good. But in fact, the relationship with yourself is the most important one. And so that's one of the biggest misconceptions. And I can kind of see that from your definition too. But what other misconceptions do you think people have when it comes to well-being?
Well, I think that the culture will tell us that well-being is like some perfect picture, right? Of vitality and, you know, features, how you look, and being in a certain exterior projection. And I have found, paradoxically, that some of the times where I have really felt most true to self and most in right action have been, like, quite recently, about 12 months ago, an elder in my family, my very beautiful Auntie Glore, was going into a hospice situation for the end of her life. And I was able to go interstate and be at her bedside through a couple of the nights as a part of saying goodbye. And that was a very grief, tender-hearted time. And it was so healing for me, and it was so integral and I felt so right about myself as able to sit with her at that important transition and to accompany my cousins and her grandchildren at that time. So I think that misconception around well-being is everything's going well is a limited assumption about well-being. Yeah,
very true. I think today we had another podcast, not on this show, another show, but we were talking about sadness and, you know, how society views it. It's such a bad thing, and, you know, it's not going to be good for us to have so much sadness or always try to portray, you know, positive things or talk about positive things. It's not, you know, life is so much more than that. It's a kaleidoscope of different things, and sadness, grief, you know, those are all different emotions, and we all have them as humans. So, you know, if we don't have them, we actually don't have a sense of well-being, because we're probably lying to ourselves. You were talking about the relationship with ourselves earlier. And I think that is so important, you know, self-honesty, such an important part of well-being. And then we have the relationship with others. And that is also similar to what you just touched on, you know, with your extended family. That's a beautiful thing. But we have different kinds of communities. And today we're talking about connectedness to community. So first of all, what is community connectedness for our audience?
Well, I think that there needs to be a sense of a shared identity for a community to become a constellation of people, you know, more than a constellation of people. It's sort of solar system in its own right, that it's got a collective shape. Mm-hmm. The question that you're asking is about community connectedness. So the interconnection, the relationships between different parts of a community, different members in a community, that's a whole mathematical amplification, really. Like, even when you think about if you've got three people, there's sort of all these different directions that the relationships can go, the combinations and permutations. So as a community gets more members, there's this whole change of possibilities mm-hmm. that can emerge mm-hmm. from the relationships. Now, there's also more weakness that can come in the bigger the structure gets. So, yeah. So what I think really matters as far as establishing community connectedness is there's this lovely learning model around three B's. So we say the first B is to feel like you belong. And that's where having some idea of what is the common unity, community of this mob, and do I identify as one of those, is quite a good starting place. So that sense of belonging, establishing that first, so that you can be the second be yourself. And then in the growth and learning space, we say it is only once you are being yourself, and you've spoken about being true to yourself.
Yeah.
And so in a collective space, what that means is allowing yourself also to be vulnerable, be seen as being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Be supported in vulnerability. That's intimacy. So then we can grow and become is the third B. So belong, be yourself, and become. And if the community is set up with that intention for us individually and collectively to evolve. There are lots of ways that people are talking about raising consciousness and all sorts of a new language or language that some people are becoming more courageous to use around why now are we looking to community more as a key pillar of our perseverance. Well, because the world's on fire, you know. We're in a time of great rapid change, and the globalization and the climate aspects of that change make this like no other time in history.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is something that I've been thinking about a lot lately as well, because I feel like the sense of self is important, but it cannot exist without the sense of community. And I feel like when it comes to, let's just say, connecting to, you know, your local community, that has changed so much. Because I remember as a kid, you're so tight with your neighbors. Now you kind of look at your neighbors, especially for people my age or the younger generation, is weird. Do you smile at your neighbor in the lift? They might find you creepy if you do so, you know? And do I ask for help if I need some? You know, that's really, really sad, right? Because it's hard. I remember I was in my previous building. I locked myself out and I was like, okay, I need to go up there to let the locksmith in. But I couldn't get in without someone's help. And then that was the moment I was like, actually, I don't know my neighbors. It occurred to me, I don't have a sense of community where I live. That's so bad. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try and bust someone on my level. And thankfully, they were kind enough. Obviously, we're all there. You know, if you ask, 9 times out of 10, that person will help you. And so I got the help I needed. Later on, I also made a friend with my neighbor. And it was really nice to have this sense of community in my local area. And this is just one of the many examples, right? You have different kinds of community. And I know that for me, having that sense of belongingness and the sense of community in my local area made me feel happier. You know, it kind of enhanced my psychological well-being as well. I feel safe, you know, I feel engaged, but I'm sure there's so much more to it. So my next question is, when it comes to this sense of community and, you know, the connectedness in the community, when we have it, I think it's great. When we don't have it, I think it's not so great for us. But how does it impact our well-being? And especially we're talking about collectiveness and, you know, the sense of bigger than who we are, right? So how does that impact also the collective well-being, not just our own well-being?
I don't think I can answer from a scientific point of view, although there are lots of people doing a lot of brain research and neuroscience nowadays to really try and give us a much more clinical answer to that type of question. For me, I have always been very comfortable with the notions of connection is connection is connection, and that even when we change form, like when we die, there's a sense for me around an ongoing connection. And that's why I think I often refer to my lineage, to my ancestors, to my late mother, now my late aunt especially. I draw on a sense of I have come from somewhere else. And I try and use that, especially in influencing my children, to remember that they are part of a chain. And I say to my husband sometimes, like, you know, our task now is to be in service to being good ancestors ourselves. Like when we leave, we will become that. And so that sense of connectivity, of interconnectivity, and that's, you know, one way of thinking about it as far as our lineage directly through our bloodlines. And some people have are doing DNA testing and that type of thing to understand where they come from in a more scientific way. But I also can very easily access other kin, other sense of lineage and belonging. So like in this intentional communities that I've been so blessed to be part of establishing, where we take a vow really to be there for each other. And we're not even involved in each other's daily lives. And sometimes we don't even know each other's surnames. But there's a commitment that you make to be together collectively. And there's an enormous sense of comfort that comes from that. And so I think your question around how does it relate to well-being, when I was setting up the business network, I used to, as part of my sales spiel, I used to say, you know, when a trapeze artist is going on the tightrope up above, as long as there is a safety net in place, they have the courage to go higher or fly faster. And hopefully they don't need the safety net, but just by virtue of having that net in place, there is the psychological safety.
True.
So that was always quite a good way of selling the membership that to the community as a way of, you know, hope for the best but plan for the worst. And I think that that really now where we're in a lot more of this VUCA reality, do you know what I mean by VUCA? So the volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity of our world. That term was coined back in the 1980s by, I think, the US military, that we were now stepping into this era. So we're fully in it now. I don't think anybody listening would want to refute how rapidly things are changing. So in this particular context, in this environment, we do need a lot more structure and safety nets for our psychological safety and sense of sanity than before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are confusing right now. So we want to be able to think clearly so that we can act wisely. And like the thinking environment that I referred to, the quality of our thinking improves when we get multiple perspectives. And so having diverse people in communities where it's safe to talk about vulnerable things, where you can get other people's input, there's so much strengthening that comes with that. Yeah. And of course, we're not alone.
Yeah.
Definitely. It feels lonely a lot of the time, but we are not alone. Yeah. And one of Meg's expressions is, I think she even says on her tombstone, she wants it to say, "We were together. I forget the rest."
Ah, beautiful. I love that. I think it's something we lack a lot nowadays, actually, because, you know, the sense of belongingness, even if you're in a community, the sense of belongingness might be really low. And this is, you know, we're all in different communities, right? I'm not saying we don't have any kinds of communities because of social media and whatnot. We do. But sometimes it's really hard to connect to your own community. So then the golden question would be, if that is the case, how do we cultivate our sense of belongingness in a community if we're already in one? And we know how important this is for our well-being, right? So maybe we need to do something about it. Yeah.
So I guess we need to, first of all, know what it is that we are longing for so that we can, what's the expression? We can be the change. But really that we can begin with ourselves and show up in the way that we're really wanting the culture of our community to become. I also think that there are times where on paper we're meant to be part of this community and it doesn't feel like we belong.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, you need to find a place where you can feel welcome and like you can be your whole self. Until you feel like you belong, you will not be your whole self. So even in family systems, we sometimes have to walk on. And that has grief and letting go and a lot of sadness and disappointment. But many of us are misfits in our family systems. Maybe it's just me, but
you're not the only one. Exhibit A.
Yeah. You know, the most interesting people usually are. We are the ones that might have been referred to as the black sheep or somehow wanted to challenge the status quo. And so if that is what's emerging for you, that you recognize that you're facing the reality that this should be community isn't feeling like community promises that it could be, well, you know, it might be time to find others. And I think that the niche communities, the smaller communities, offer a much more true sense of belonging now. And this is the wonder of the internet and all these crazy media channels. And, you know, we do not have to consume mass media. We do not have to just read the one magazine or the one newspaper. We can really choose where we spend our time. And so be with the people that help you to feel like you have a place.
That's true. Very true. I think, you know, I'm conscious of time, and I think there's so much more to cover when it comes to community connectedness and what we can do. So let's move on to something more practical. You know, we have this practice section. I think this is where we can really speak to the audience. So we know that there are different kinds of communities out there. We are accessing, you know, all kinds of different communities thanks to the internet as well. And we know that it can enhance our well-being if, you know, we approach it in the right way. Now, what is a practice that you do personally that you can recommend to our audience when it comes to fostering community connectedness in your own community?
Yeah, I love this question, and there are probably lots of practices, but the one that in a group situation I think has the most remarkable sort of alchemy and magical effect is the practice of asking for what you need and offering what you can. And it's actually important to do it in that sequence. So most of us are actually pretty good folk and really generous, and we love nothing more than to help, right? So if someone comes to us and asks for something, we can offer and give. And in our culture today, where we've prided ourselves on our, you know, independence and separateness and excess of all sorts of resources and tools, we have a lot to offer and give. But where the imbalance is that we don't even feel comfortable to ask our neighbor to let us into the apartment when we've locked ourselves out. So asking for what we need is a really, really important first 50%, the more important one, I think, at this time. And what I've recognized or realized is oftentimes we don't even know what it is that we need. So you actually have to ask yourself that question before you can even ask others. So when we ask for what we need, a whole lot of ripple effect starts to happen. Yeah. And that is the interconnection. And then, you know, we offer what we can, and it's not a direct, it's not linear. It's not that you're going to ask me and I'm going to, you know, give you something to solve for that longing that you have and vice versa. But within a larger community, it's more of that sort of pay it forward type of idea. You know, she gave me this because I needed that, and then I heard they needed the other, so I left something behind. And so there is this sense of a collective well. I love the idea of a watering hole, where sometimes we sit around and we generate water for the well, for the collective goodness and hydration. Mm-hmm. And other times we arrive really parched and we just come to drink from the well. Mm. And that's what it's there for.
Yeah.
And if no one drinks from the well, what point is there in having one?
Yeah. That's a beautiful practice. I think we can all, you know, start to do and try at least once and see how we go, because, you know, it can be uncomfortable asking for what you need, you know, because sometimes, I mean, for some people, it's probably easy for them to ask, and for others, oh, am I asking for too much, right? That's always top of our mind most of the time. And I think for us to be in a community and be able to ask is a very important, I think, virtue, because I was thinking about my own communities, you know, different kinds of communities I'm in. And when you were sharing that, I'm like, would I be comfortable asking for help and how? That was what I was thinking about. And I think we can all start somewhere, you know, ask for small favors, not big ones, small ones as to start with. And yeah, like I kind of had to, you know, ask my neighbor for help because I had no other choice. But yeah, I could have asked for smaller things beforehand to build a relationship. You know, I think that's also another thing. When we don't have that space, it's kind of hard. So yeah, I think this is good for our audience. You know, we can all try doing this and report back to you and see how we go. You know, the sense of community is very important. Now, before we let you go, we have open mic. And as I mentioned to you when we started the conversation, this is really an open mic. So it's anything you want to talk about today. So the floor is all yours, Robin. Go for it.
Gosh, so many offers for me to ask for what I need, I guess. I mean, there are a lot of things that I feel very passionate about that are very interesting about what's emerging as our world goes through this change. And it, I guess it comes through in all different ways. There's the Barbie movie showing us that there's a whole new wave of feminism here now. And that's a great thing for us to be leaning into. And for me, this rising feminine is about the qualities that feminine... you're going to have to edit that rumble out. So for me, there's a whole lot of imbalance in our society at the moment. And we have, certainly in my whole lifetime and then some, we have been living in a very patriarchal society where the emphasis has been on material things, on efficiencies and effectiveness, and on sort of the winner takes it all. And that... mindset is not going to see us persevere and survive in the sort of disruption that we're in right now. So why I'm so somewhat encouraged by the rising femininity, this modern femininity that I see, is it has me feel that there's a possibility of, as more and more people, and this is not about women and men at all. In fact, the non-binary space is really important in breaking this duality thinking that we have right now. This is not linear. This is not black and white. And these wicked problems are probably unsolvable problems. So let's not even think in terms of how to fix, but how we can be in right action, how we can contribute towards narrowing divides, towards creating more harmonious relationships and less imbalance. And starting from within ourselves, and that internal dissonance is when we don't look straight at ourselves in the mirror and we're not honest with ourselves about our inverted commas weaknesses, our vulnerabilities. I'm really asking people to be as fully human as you can, and not because it's fun. In fact, there's a lot of sadness that you spoke about that then we need to get used to carrying with us. But because we need to stop pretending, and we need to give permission to each other and to the our children coming through to be okay with being complicated, be okay with having darkness and light, and that we will be there for each other no matter how one another are showing up. And I believe that when you are allowed to be yourself, however you are showing up today, then you can relax and restabilize and return or renew and come back to being a better version. So, and being a good presence for one another. So I just really have a lot of compassion for so many people, including myself, who are having some pretty wobbly moments and days of not feeling like we can do it all, and to remind each other that that is not the definition of well-being. The definition of well-being is being able to be honest with, like you said, I think at the very beginning, Lou, you know, and patient with ourselves and generous with each other.
That's a beautiful message to close with. Thank you so much. And thanks again for being here. And it's been a really not just lighthearted, but also, you know, deep and thought-provoking conversation. You know, it's hard to talk about a topic that would, you know, get people to think in such a, I think in such a natural way. It doesn't force a lot of different things. And I think you just naturally brought in a lot of insights, and I really enjoy that.
You have been listening to Doing Well, the Wellbeing Science Insights podcast produced by the Wellbeing Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 Life Management Perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website, we.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Lungo. Thanks for tuning in.